Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, June 29th, 2023. Former Big Bend Representative Will Hurd announces presidential run, by Allegra Hobbs, A-L-L-E-G-R-A at BigBendSentinel.com. Texas. Will Hurd, who served three terms as U.S. Representative for Texas 23rd Congressional District, which encompasses the Big Bend region, announced last week that he is running for president. Hurd announced his entry into the Republican primary on Thursday morning during a CBS News segment, then posted an announcement video in which he enumerates the dangers he believes are threatening the nation and deploys a call to arms to oppose both President Joe Biden and lawless, selfish, former president and Republican candidate Donald Trump. At home, illegal immigration and fentanyl stream into our country, Hurd says. Inflation still out of control, crime and homelessness growing in our cities, and liberals do nothing. Hurd distinguished himself on the national stage during his tenure, from 2015 to 2021, representing the vast borderland district as a relatively moderate Republican, willing to break from his party at times, notably in matters of LGBTQ rights and immigration. However, he did vote along the party line in most cases, including when he twice voted in support of a 20-week abortion ban. Hurd was a vocal critic of Donald Trump, and as a representative was intensely critical of Trump's plan to build a border wall, calling it ineffective. However, in a recent interview with Fox News during a visit to the northern border, Hurd said he would not be opposed to completing stretches of Trump's border wall where a physical barrier makes sense, where there's urban-to-urban contact, he said, while also emphasizing the deployment of technology along the border. Every mile of the border is different from every other mile, said Hurd. In the same interview, he called President Biden the worst border security president in U.S. history and took particular issue with the administration's policy around asylum seekers, which Hurd characterized as treating everybody as an asylum seeker. Treating everybody as an asylum seeker is something that started under Donald Trump and something that Joe Biden continued, and Joe Biden just added fuel to that fire, said Hurd. And so doing that is something that we would stop on day one. Biden earlier this year imposed significant limitations on asylum seekers, mandating that asylum seekers will be penalized unless they cross through a port of entry or demonstrated they were denied protection in a country they crossed through. A representative for Hurd did not return multiple requests for an interview by press time. Photographed courtesy of the University of North Texas Libraries, the Portal to Texas History, Marfa Public Library. The descendants of early Presidio County cattle rancher Lucas Charles Bright, pictured here in 1930, are currently in a legal battle concerning the historic family ranch. Storied Bright Ranch at heart of family's multi-year legal battle. Jury finds Jim White breached fiduciary duty as fate of trust and ranch land remain undecided. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. By Allegra Hobbs, ALLAGRA at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa, a Presidio County jury last week found that Jim White breached his fiduciary duty to the beneficiaries of the family trust he oversees and that his brothers are entitled to $3 million in damages because that breach was intentional or fraudulent, the beginning of the end of a 5-year legal dispute over the White family's vast land holdings in the county. The jury also concluded that Jim White owes $1 million to the trust his mother began to compensate for alleged damages to the estate caused by a failure to comply with his fiduciary duty as trustee, and an additional $1,206,513 in legal fees to brothers Mac and Beau White. The legal battle began in 2018 when Mac and Beau brought a lawsuit against their brother Jim, alleging his actions as trustee benefited him and his family but not the trust beneficiaries, including themselves, signaling a breach of his fiduciary duty. The plaintiffs have sought more than just monetary compensation. They have argued that Jim should be removed as trustee and that the White Trust should be modified to allow for the sale of the 61,548-acre Bright Ranch. The verdict was entered Friday morning after a 3-day trial in a sweltering courtroom. Lawyers for the warring siblings made their closing entreaties on Thursday to a sea of jurors who sat fanning themselves as the local temperature soared to 100 degrees. The defense painted a portrait of Jim as a flawed but well-meaning caretaker of the family estate, trying to carry out his ancestors' wishes. The prosecution presented Jim as a profiteer who left his brothers in the dust while he reaped the benefits of the Bright Ranch. The jury ultimately was swayed by Mac and Beau's tale of familial betrayal. But the matter is far from settled. The conjoined fates of the trust and the land remain unresolved. The jury verdict makes no recommendations on the prosecution's more sweeping and consequential asks. The presiding judge, Judge Melvin Rex Emerson of Kerrville, has yet to render a final judgment on the case. Ted Lyons, the attorney leading Jim White's defense, said his team plans to appeal the verdict and to oppose any attempts to remove Jim as trustee or to modify the trust. The fate of the ranch land that has been in the family since 1885 is at stake, argued Lyons. The siblings' great-grandmother, Mrs. Edward McMinn Bright, stipulated in her will that it should not be sold, and the trust created by their mother makes the same mandate. That's what Jim's been dedicated to preserving his whole life, said Lyons. He's been out there for 47 years working out there, and trustee since 2010. So selling is not something that he wants to do. He wants to honor what his parents wanted. And as for Mac and Beau, Lyons didn't mince words. Those two brothers just want to destroy it. But Mac and Beau, in their 9th amended petition filed with the court, paint a very different picture of Jim as trustee, that of a man who has used his position to pour money and resources into bettering the ranch, which he used to maintain the family cattle business and employ his own son and wife while failing to generate income for his siblings. Crucially, the trust terminates upon the deaths of all 4 siblings, at which point the trust estate will go to their descendants. Jim and sister Hester, who is not a party to the lawsuit, have descendants who will benefit from the ranch. Mac and Beau do not. Mac and Beau argue that the purpose of the trust is to use the ranch to generate income for its beneficiaries, which Jim has failed to do, but also that their ancestor could not have foreseen the impossible nature of generating income with the ranch when she penned her last will and testament. Judicial modification of the trust, they say, is necessary to fulfill its intended purpose. For Mac and Beau, the long-awaited verdict means they may finally benefit from the trust they feel their brother has monopolized and mismanaged, say their attorneys, Steve Scarnoulis, Frank Eichard and Deborah McClure. They expect the judge to enter a final judgment in their favor. We are pleased with the unanimous verdict and look forward to getting a judgment entered on behalf of our clients, wrote Mack and Bowe's attorneys in a joint statement. It has been a long road, but this was a big step towards allowing them to benefit from their trust as their family intended. We thank the jury for their hard work and dedication over 2 weeks of evidence. The family's presence in Presidio County began in 1885 with the arrival of Patriarch Lucas Charles Bright, one of the first cattle ranchers in the area. He settled near Capote Mountain, located west of Marfa, having driven a small herd of cattle over 600 miles from Frio County, Texas. In the early days of settlement in Presidio County, the state granted land to settlers who filed for what was considered unoccupied land. Over time, he established the Bright Ranch, then a 125,000-acre estate, complete with a post office, store, and a large herd of Highland Hereford cattle, a breed which defined early cattle ranching in the region. At one time, the ranch maintained a herd of 3,000 to 4,000 purebred breeding Hereford cows, marked by the family's Bar Cross brand. L.C. Bright's herd has furnished the foundation stock for many Presidio County's ranches, which has made Marfa famous as being the heart of the cattle country, writes Kate Adele Hill in Home Builders of West Texas. A 1926 headline in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram featuring the Bright Ranch read, "Herd declared best in country. No better Hereford breeder can be found." That same year, the Brights set a record for selling 1,000 purebred bulls a year for 14 consecutive years. But the hard-won cattle ranching success wasn't L.C.'s alone. In 1896, Bright married a young woman by the name Edward Eddie McMinn Anderson, who came to Presidio County to serve as a schoolteacher and live on her family's ranch, the McMinn Ranch, located 45 miles outside of Marfa, land that eventually became part of the Bright Ranch. The Brights' impact on the area spread beyond the ranch as the pair became involved with local organizations, philanthropic endeavors, and Marfa's developing infrastructure. They participated in the Boys' Camp meetings, annual religious retreats in Jeff Davis County, donated $60,000 to Texas Christian University for the creation of what is referred to today as the Bright Divinity School, and, according to Lon Taylor's collection of essays, Marfa for the Perplexed, commissioned architect Leighton Green Knipe to design the first Christian church in Marfa, a 500-capacity worship center that has since closed, located to the west of the courthouse. In the history of Big Bend, both in the development of the livestock industry and in the building of a cultured civilization, Mr. and Mrs. Lucas Bright have written a colorful chapter, writes Hill in Home Builders of West Texas. The Brights are also responsible for two additional local architectural landmarks: the Bright Building, located in downtown Marfa at 103 North Highland Avenue, conceived as an office and store, and the Bright Mansion, located at 601 North Ridge Street, the family home on the edge of town abutting ranch land. What was referred to as the Bar Cross Ranch, or headquarters, at Capote Peak, was also the site of a historically significant raid in 1917, now called the Bright Ranch Raid. Outlaws from Mexico, thought to have ties to Pancho Villa, robbed goods from the Bright store, seized horses, and murdered a mail carrier and his two passengers on Christmas Day. In the aftermath of the Bright Ranch Raid, paranoia and fear gripped the county, leading to the Porvenir Massacre the extrajudicial killing of 15 Mexican-American men and boys, led by a posse of Texas Rangers and local ranchers. The raid on the Bright Ranch signaled a trespass on one of the most prominent and well-secured ranches in Texas, wrote historian Monica Munoz Martinez in her book, The Injustice Never Leaves You, Anti-Mexican Violence in Texas. The original Bright Trust was created by Eddie through her last will and testament, naming her descendants, daughter Hester and granddaughters Nancy and Jane, as beneficiaries, along with Bright Divinity School and First Christian Church of Marfa. Its primary asset was the Bright Ranch, but it also included a breeding herd of Hereford cattle, a commercial building and lots in Marfa, the Bright home and the pasture to its west, and more. In 1946, Jane married James E. White, Jr., a member of another prominent local ranching family. Jane would give birth to Jim, Mac, Beau, and Hester. When their mother, Hester, died in 1995, Nancy and Jane decided to partition the Bright Trust into two new trusts, one benefiting Nancy's descendants, the Lynches, and the other benefiting Jane's, the Whites. J.P. Morgan Chase entered into a plan to revise the Bright Trust to allow its partition in 2005, and a final modified judgment on the matter was rendered in 2008. The final judgment allowed the Bright Trust to be split into the Lynch Trust and the White Trust, and for the trustee to sell properties other than the ranch land and to reduce the breeding herd. J.P. Morgan also made Jim manager of the ranch, allotting him a salary of $5,000 a month. Jane White had also created children's trusts for each of her four children, which consisted of equally split undivided interests in some of the White land in Presidio County. Per the suit, the 2005 restructuring entailed Jim facilitating an exchange between land owned under the children's trusts and land owned by the White Trust. When Jane died in 2010, Jim became sole trustee of the White Trust. Court records paint a picture of familial strife over the handling of the trust and its assets, even before Jim took over. Mac and Beau allege that Jim used his power of attorney during the partition process to benefit himself and his descendants. That breakdown set the stage for later disputes over the land. As Mac and Beau see it, they are not benefiting from the White Trust as they should, while Jim is reaping the benefits of his role as trustee of the White Trust. Then there is the matter of Jim's continued maintenance of the cattle business, which Mac and Beau argue has contributed to his failure to generate income for the trust. The Whites are not the only prominent ranching family to have become embroiled in conflict over their inherited land. Sam Middleton, third-generation owner of Charles S. Middleton & Son, a farm and ranch brokerage and appraisal business based in Lubbock, has been involved with a number of high-profile ranch sales over the years, including the sale of the Wagoner Ranch, a historic 500,000-acre-plus property in North Texas that sold for $725 million in 2016, following a years-long legal battle amongst heirs, the largest ranch sale in the history of the nation. Middleton said these days the value of historic ranches like the Bright Ranch largely lies in the property itself, rather than income that can be generated off of the land. Rather than traditional cattle ranching, many large ranches today make money off of hunting leases, renewable energy, the sale of resources, and more. The Bright Ranch does offer hunting opportunities. You have an asset worth millions and millions of dollars, and ranches do not return a large amount of money based on the value of the property, said Middleton. He points to data collected by the Texas Real Estate Research Center, which shows the appreciation of ranches has been astronomical since the 1800s, where land was sometimes purchased from the state for as low as $1 an acre. It's been about 60 years now that we have been documenting the appreciation in ranches in Texas on an average, even with recessions that we've gone through, declines in market, droughts. Ranches in Texas have appreciated approximately 6% per year overall, and sometimes even 20% a year or more, said Middleton. Working closely with ranching families on the sale of their properties, Middleton said oftentimes second, third, and fourth generations of early ranchers do not have the sentimental attachment to the land their ancestors had, and rifts tend to result amongst heirs from differing philosophies. I think it's just the pride of ownership of some of those who are closely tied to the ranch, said Middleton. There's a real pride of ownership that they want to keep it intact, and then you've got others that don't have that feeling. That's what causes these issues between family members. Mac and Bo's allegations against Jim go so far as to accuse him of self-dealing by continuing to employ himself as ranch manager, hiring his sons to work on the ranch, and bringing in his wife to do bookkeeping. The lawsuit against him characterizes these payments as excessive. Jim's lawyer counters that there is nothing illegitimate or nefarious about the employment of family members to work on the family ranch. Families work on the ranch, said Lyons of Texas Ranching Families. There's nothing wrong with that. But the general thrust of Mac and Bo's grievance is that through these employment decisions and more, choosing to continue the cattle business, spending money on improvements to the ranch and on ranching equipment, led to a failure to generate income for the trust beneficiaries. Most recently, a decision made by Jim spawned an entirely new lawsuit, which is being stalled as the 2018 litigation awaits resolution. In October of 2021, Jim sold the trust's undivided interest in 260.1 acres near Marfa, called the Bull Trap property, to Midland-based Dog Canyon Investments, LLC. Its principal, Scott King, is a senior engineer at oil and gas company SM Energies. In April of last year, Dog Canyon sued Jim, Mac, and Bo for a partition of the property, demanding both surface and mineral rights attached to the land. In the original suit between the siblings, Mac and Bo pointed to the Bull Trap sale as evidence of Jim's breach of duty. For now, the White family awaits a judge's ruling on the familial dispute. The jury was tasked with rendering 12 findings, almost all of which favor Mac and Bo. The jury found that Jim White did not comply with his fiduciary duty to trust beneficiaries, that he engaged in this conduct in bad faith, intentionally or with reckless indifference, or that he derived profit as a result. It found that Jim should pay $1 million to the Jane White Trust for any loss or depreciation in value of the estate, but did not award damages for profit made by Jim for his benefit or profit that would have gone to the trust. The jury also found that Jim did materially violate or attempt to materially violate the terms of the trust, but also found that violation did not result in financial loss to the trust. In Jim's favor, the jury found that he had complied with his fiduciary duty with regards to the children's trust during the 2008 division. Finally, the jury found that Jim had committed an intentional or fraudulent breach of his fiduciary duty to Bo and Mac and awarded the brothers damages and attorney's fees as a result. Lyons said that he felt the verdict was flawed. For one, he argued, it contained inconsistencies in claiming the trust had not suffered monetary losses, while also finding that the trust had been damaged. I don't think the verdict will stand, said Lyons. We're going to appeal it, and we'll go from there. Photograph courtesy of the University of North Texas Libraries, the Portal to Texas History, Marfa Public Library. Panoramic view of the Bright Ranch property in the 1920s. Marfa VFD responds to multiple lightning fires by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBenSentinel.com. Presidio County. This past week, the Marfa Volunteer Fire Department responded to three separate lightning fires around the county. The fires were a result of what's known as dry lightning, or strikes without an accompanying rainstorm. The largest of the three fires was reported to the department on Saturday evening. The department was already out on another call at Plata, between Marfa and Shafter along Casa Piedra Road, where lightning had struck a cottonwood tree. Then a call came in about a fire on Ocotillo Ranch between Plata and Cibolo Creek. Night had fallen, making it difficult to fight the blaze amidst rough terrain. Presidio County Emergency Management Director and Marfa VFD Chief Gary Mitschke told landowner Larry Skiles that he would return in the morning to resume work. Mitschke typically doesn't send crews in to fight fires at night and was especially glad he didn't this time around. It was really rough country, he said. We couldn't get trucks to it, so we had to get as close as we could, then work it with hand tools and water packs. The obvious downside of working to contain a fire during the day is the heat. It was around 100 degrees. We couldn't work it for a long period of time before we had to rest and rehydrate, he said. Mitschke pulled the crew around 1 p.m. to rest while he checked out the fire on four wheels and waited to see if a passing rainstorm would help alleviate the situation. Assistance from the Texas Forest Service arrived later that afternoon to ensure from the air that the fire was completely snuffed out. At around 155 acres, the fire was not particularly large compared to what the department can tackle, but the remoteness of the land and the frequency of similar fires that week had Mitschke on edge. Just days before encountering two dry lightning fires at once, Mitschke's crew had extinguished a fire with the same cause on 26 acres south of Marfa. We're starting to experience what we have in the past with the dry lightning and the fire starts. The last couple of years it's been kind of quiet that way, he said. In years past, from storms coming through dry lightning like that, I remember getting called for 6, 7, or 8 fires in a matter of a couple of hours. It gets us running every which way. Though the county has enjoyed a deluge of rainfall in previous weeks, Mitschke noted that the extreme heat persisting through the region dried the terrain up fast. Conditions right now are pretty bad, Mitschke said. With this kind of heat, even those places that received rain a week or two ago, this heat and no humidity have dried it up. Larry Skiles said he counted himself lucky there was very little wind the night the fire broke out on his property. He had hopped into an off-road cart with neighbor Brian Buchanan, who first spotted the flames, to circle its perimeter and get a sense of its size. They noticed its proximity to Buchanan's property, which contained more equipment. The Skiles pasture just north of the one that caught fire had cattle on it. A strong wind could have exacerbated the problem significantly. Thankfully, firefighters also benefited from a sudden rainfall that helped put out the flames. Fortunately, it was not a huge fire, but it could easily have been had it not been for the work done by the fire department and the Forest Service and the good Lord. A little rain shower helped slow it down, said Skiles. P.J. Serrano pleads not guilty to possession of child sex abuse material. By Mary Cantrell, mkcantrell at bigbensentinel.com. Marfa. Marfa resident Patricio Javier P.J. Serrano, who was recently indicted by a federal grand jury on the charge of possession of child pornography, pleaded not guilty to the charge during an arraignment hearing last week. The plea of not guilty was entered in the U.S. District Court in Pecos, presided over by Judge David Fannin. Serrano will now have the option to either pursue a plea agreement with a deadline of July 26th or go to trial. A preliminary trial date has been set for August 14th in Pecos before Judge David Counts. Serrano, 35, has been held without bond since his arrest on May 5th, when investigators from the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the Texas Department of Public Safety executed a search warrant for Serrano and his residence and discovered multiple images and videos of child sex abuse material involving prepubescent boys on his Samsung Galaxy smartphone, per the criminal complaint. Additional electronics and personal belongings of Serrano's, including tablets, documents, pornographic DVDs, a digital camera, and more, were seized by law enforcement, according to court documents. Earlier this month, a previous romantic partner of Serrano's, Sonia Murillo, was arrested and charged with child sexual exploitation, after a Texas Department of Public Safety agent discovered video evidence of Murillo performing sex acts on a young child. At least 8 saved Snapchat videos were found when conducting a forensic review of a cell phone from a different child pornography investigation in Marfa, per the complaint. Investigators have not yet commented on whether or not the two cases are related. Murillo, 32, is being held without bond after she waived her right to a detention hearing earlier this month. Serrano's attorney, Shane O'Neill, and the U.S. Attorney's Office did not respond to requests for comment by press time. Orlando man and stepson die in Big Bend National Park, by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Big Bend National Park. On Friday, National Park Service rangers and Border Patrol responded to a call for help along the Marufo Vega Trail on the eastern edge of Big Bend National Park. A 14-year-old boy was found dead along the trail. A 31-year-old male was also found dead at the site of a motor vehicle crash near the trailhead. The park's communications center received a call for help around 6 p.m. The 31-year-old male and his 2 stepsons, aged 14 and 21, had gone for a hike. The 14-year-old fell ill and lost consciousness along the trail, and the stepfather decided to hike back to their vehicle and drive for help. The 21-year-old attempted to hike back to the trailhead with his unconscious brother. Their vehicle, a Winnebago camper, was no longer in the parking area. He walked along the road and hitched a ride to a ranger's house to ask for help. Around 7:30 p.m., the 14-year-old was found dead. Around 8 p.m., first responders discovered the van, which had been driven over the edge of an embankment of the Boquillas Canyon Overlook, just a few thousand feet from the trailhead. At press time, officials had not yet released the names of the deceased, but could confirm that the family was from Orlando and that the 21-year-old had returned home. The 3 had been hiking the Marufo Vega Trail, a strenuous 14-mile loop, most often promoted as a backpacking trail. Park Service brochures advise that the route can be difficult to follow and that there is no shade or water along the trail. Last Friday also happened to be the hottest day so far this year in that part of the park. Nearby Rio Grande Village recorded a sweltering 119 degrees, the highest in the park. It typically sees the hottest temperatures and is among the hottest in Texas, said Tom Vandenberg, chief of interpretation and visitor services at Big Bend National Park. The park averages between 1 and 3 fatalities a year, often from heat illness, though Vandenberg explained that the park doesn't receive official causes of death from medical examiners for their final reports. It is safe to say that the majority of these unfortunate incidents are cardiac-related or the result of another underlying condition that is exacerbated by heat and strenuous activity, he explained. Marufo Vega is a particularly deadly hike. Even in relatively cooler weather, the trail is still extremely exposed. Over the years, major search and rescue calls along the trail span February to October, with February being the statistically riskiest month. In February 2002 alone, 14 people were rescued along the trail across 2 major search and rescue efforts. Over the past decade, the trail has seen 3 summertime deaths. On August 3, 2013, Nicholas Bull, a 24-year-old graduate student working an internship at the Apache Corporation in Midland, went hiking along the trail with 2 friends. As temperatures climbed toward 108 degrees, the group ran out of water. One decided to hike back to the trailhead to get help. Bull and the remaining hiker separated from each other. His body was eventually found 200 yards from the trailhead. On July 2, 2019, the trail also claimed the life of Richard Merrill, a software engineer contracted by NASA at the time of his death. He was planning to go on a morning hike to a scenic overlook just a few miles down the trail and return by 2 p.m. His body was found later that day, not far from his destination. Merrill was a moderator on Big Bend Chat, a forum dedicated to aficionados of the remote desert park. His expertise and relatively modest plans along a route he'd followed before made it all the more surprising that he never made it back to the trailhead. Friends and family have spent the past few years trying to figure out what happened. The weather that morning was relatively mild for the season, hovering around 90 degrees. He left behind a locker full of digital evidence, GPS tracks, his last photograph. His backpack was still full of Gatorade. Big Bend Chat founder David Locke still wonders. When Richard died, it was a real eye-opener for me, he said. If he could die out there, even though he knew all the risks, even though he knew all the precautions and he took them, what the hell? How does that happen? Locke said that the discourse on his page after this weekend's incident has been starkly divided. Some want the government to jump in and close sections of the park during the summer, or at the very least, wipe Marufo Vega off the map. Others feel the park's many heat warnings are sufficient. Vandenberg said that, legally speaking, the park is doing its due diligence by educating park visitors as much as they can about the dangers of the heat. He cited Johnson versus U.S. Department of the Interior, a 1992 federal appeals case filed in the wake of a rock climbing accident at a national park. The Johnson case ruled that the National Park Service is not responsible for preventing all death and injury from voluntary recreation, and that the agency doesn't need to take on unnecessary risk in their attempts to recover a lost or injured hiker. We train on the idea that our first priority on a search and rescue is to protect ourselves, as we are not helping the situation if we create more patients during the incident, he said. Locke said it was important to coach people to think about their outdoor adventures holistically, beyond just bagging peaks and crushing miles. You've got to think about the whole journey, he said. The most dangerous part is coming back down. The ability to survive, he noted, isn't just about being fit or having the right gear. You've got to be aware of your own abilities, but some people are completely warped in their understanding of what they're capable of, he said. People who have survived situations like that, it stems from their will and their emotional state, and being able to keep their emotional state in control. As both summer temperatures and park visitation figures soar, Locke, Vandenberg, and other folks invested in the future of the park are hoping every visitor makes it home alive. One thing that the park absolutely can't control is the weather. This tragic event is a reminder of the unforgiving nature of the desert in summer, Vandenberg said. Photo courtesy of Big Bend National Park. A view from the Marufo Vega Trail in Big Bend National Park, where a 14-year-old boy passed away this weekend. His stepfather was also found deceased at the site of a motor vehicle crash.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.